morning.
Just a moment. You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Erin McNeil, and I represent the Commonwealth of Virginia Division of Risk Management in this matter. And as honored as I am to be here today, this shouldn't have been a case. Before Rocky Watts' claim, the parties were all in harmony about the priority of coverage between the VACORP policy and the DRM plan.
Stop right there. Officer, tell them to stop work next door, all right? We're not going to interrupt counsel's argument with all of that. Tell them to start. We're going to let you start all over again. Matter of fact,
I think they heard me.
They think they heard me. They start all over again. Put the time back on the clock.
Thank you, Your Honor.
First.
Again, my name is Erin McNeil, and I represent the Commonwealth of Virginia in this matter. And this shouldn't have been a case. Before Rocky Watts' personal injury claim, the parties were all in harmony about the priority of coverage between the VACORP policy and the DRM plan. The VACORP policy has clear language in it that says it's intended to be primary and pay the cost of defense for a covered claim. And at worst, it is co-primary, and they contribute pro rata to a claim when there's a second primary policy. The DRM plan addresses the fact that a lot of policies have a lot of exclusionary language in it, and the DRM plan says that they're last in line to pay any coverage. They'll pay any claim that isn't covered by another source of coverage, with one exception. And when it came time to pay Rocky Watts' personal injury claim asserted against the jail, then and only then did VACORP find a conflict with 2.2-1839G, and they asserted that they wrote coverage that was not permitted under the statute of Virginia, and that the DRM plan language was also in conflict with the statute. Because of this invented conflict, they led the court to make three main errors. First, the court misread Section G of 2.2-1839 to say that a regional jail can only buy excess insurance. Secondly, it led the court to hold that Section D of 1839 means that DRM has to pay the cost of defense for any claim asserted against a plan participant, even claims that aren't covered under the plan. Finally, the trial court held that a federal civil rights claim asserted against healthcare provider defendants is a medical malpractice claim. Taking these three errors in turn, the main error in this case comes from the reading of Section G of 1839. Section G says by its plain language that despite the broad delegation of authority to DRM to develop plan language throughout 1839, DRM cannot prevent a regional jail from buying excess insurance.
May I ask you this? Under the Virginia Corp policy and the policy limits, $5 million, would that totally cover the settlement?
Your Honor, the record is silent on that point. By the agreement of the parties agreed to leave the settlement amount out of the record so that it would influence the outcome in this case.
Well, the difficulty with that agreement is that it's a perfectly good idea to determine primary versus excess, but if the court were to go to primary pro rata, we wouldn't do that if it would depend on the coverage limits and the actual underlying claim. So that there is a difficulty, there's an analytical gap in that aspect of the decision-making.
Your Honor, I think that this court could say that the two sources of coverage are should contribute pro rata to the settlement, and then DRM and VACORP would square up that settlement amount and contribute pro rata to the final total based on their coverage limits and contribute proportionally to the settlement amount based
on. Of course, we don't get the pro rata at all if the Virginia Corp policy is in fact primary.
That's correct. And I believe that is the reading under of Section G. I believe that you would have to find to contribute pro rata, you would have to find that Section G does prohibit DRM's other coverage provision and that it conflicts with Section G, but the VACORP's other coverage provision doesn't. So Section G, again, says that a DRM cannot prevent a regional jail from buying excess insurance. That was added to 1839 after the plan language, the DRM plan, was signed by the governor in 2005. Section G was added in 2007 and directly addresses the language in DRM's other coverage provision of their plan. The other coverage provision has two paragraphs. The first paragraph says that the DRM plan will only provide coverage when there's no other source of coverage. It's a source of coverage of last resort when there's no market solution for a plan participant. But there is an exception. Regional jails and sheriff's offices specifically can buy an excess policy specifically that names the DRM plan as primary, but they do have to get permission from DRM first before buying that policy in order to exercise that exception.
But your point is nothing in any of that discussion says that you can't have a private insurer sign off on a primary coverage.
That's exactly correct. Nothing in that language suggests that. Section G is a limitation on DRM's authority, not on a jail's authority, to buy other kinds of insurance. In this case, in fact, the record reflects that the jail intended to buy primary insurance. VACORP intended to sell primary insurance. They expressly contracted for that, and there was no attempt to make this an excess policy at any time. And so the jail, in fact, has expressed statutory authority to enter into any contract it sees fit to achieve its mission. So unlike other cases where you have that principle of what's in the statute excludes everything not in the statute, here you have a second statute at play that does give the jail the authority to enter into any contract it wants. And Section G is a preservation of that authority, saying that DRM cannot restrict a jail's authority to enter into an excess contract when they seek permission to do so under that second paragraph of the other coverage provision. Moving on to Section D. Section D, I think the error the trial court made there flowed from the error they made in Section G. The trial court held that the DRM plan is always primary, and that is simply not true. When you correct the error under Section G, that invented conflict that restores the plan language to both the DRM plan and the other coverage provision in the VACORP policy. In that case, Section D says DRM has a duty to pay the cost of defense for a plan participant and the right to settle any case covered under the plan. That language creates a right and a duty in one sentence with the conjunction and that links the duty to pay the cost of defense to the right to settle the case. And that's to give DRM the ability to control litigation costs. It only applies when DRM is covering the claim, which once you correct the error in reading Section G, that would only apply when there's no other source of coverage. Nothing in the trial court's decision, nothing in VACORP's argument suggests that VACORP's contracted for language that says that VACORP will cover the cost of defense when they cover a claim is voided at all by Section D. And that is where the court made an error by saying that DRM always has to pay the cost of defense. Finally, on the issue of medical malpractice, the trial court held that a federal civil rights claim brought under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983 was a cause of action for medical malpractice to which the $2 million medical malpractice limit applied. However, to find that holding, the court had to leave the rule announced by this court in Alcoy versus Valley Nursing Homes. This court held that although tort can be committed during the provisioning of health care to a patient, that is malpractice, but not every tort that occurs to a person in a medical setting or a healthcare setting or that occurs to a person by a healthcare provider.
May I ask you this, but what about the nurses?
Exactly. The nurses, in Looking at Ledford versus Sullivan, which is out of the Seventh Circuit in 1997, that was a nurse and a doctor defendant. And in that federal civil rights case under 1983, in a jail setting, a doctor and a nurse withheld a prisoner's prescribed medication. So it's very similar in that the prisoner suffered withdrawal symptoms from having a substance withheld that he needed by healthcare providers. But the court held there that you didn't need medical expert evidence to show a medical standard of care because a medical standard of care wasn't the measure of their breach.
But I get that. 1983 civil rights actions are not med-mal actions per se, but 1983 is nothing but reckless indifference. It is a constitutional tort. And so the way the Supreme Court describes it, which seems sort of odd, but that's what they say. If you have a medical professional who's recklessly indifferent, that's often higher than negligence. In fact, it's necessarily higher than negligence under the Parrott line of cases. So if you, why isn't that a higher grade of medical malpractice, making the assertion that the med-mal cap does not apply to the medical defendants counterintuitive?
It's because their deliberate indifference was not during the provisioning of their health care. They didn't make an error or omission while they were treating Mr. Watts. The allegations that are specific to the 1983 claim, and again, this complaint did have a medical malpractice claim. There are facts in there to support that, but that claim is time-barred. So it cannot be the measure of indemnification here. We have to only look at what supports the 1983
claim. I'm sorry, but isn't that the problem with not having the settlement to look at? Because we don't know what the settlement settled, what claims were part of the settlement. I'm sure it was a global release of all the claims, but how do we know that the defendant nurses were not being accused of reckless indifference in the actual provision of actual medical care?
That they were, but that would be a state law claim, which was time-barred under the precedent by this court. So the only claim that would have been viable to move forward, we did settle all the claims globally, that is completely correct, but the only claim that would be the measure for indemnification would be the claim that's viable against the defendants, and that's the 1983 claim. And that the allegations in that 1983 claim are that the nurses and the jailers, when watching Mr. Watts have multiple seizures, didn't summon an ambulance and didn't release him to the hospital, release him to his family to get him to the hospital. They didn't. It isn't that the nurses failed or made an omission in the way that they provided health care. They weren't in the act of providing health care. They and the guards, and they're lumped together in that count.
Well, the guards are obviously not providing medical care, but the problem I'm having is the nurses. They're making medical judgments as to whether they have a patient that needs additional and higher grade of care than they can provide at the jail. Isn't that of a kind of medical malpractice at a higher level of mens rea?
I think that when you look at Alcoy and you look at Ledford, it shows that it's not. Because in Ledford, the court held, it was examining a very similar question. Did the doctor and the nurse exercise medical judgment when they withheld this prisoner's medication? And that court said you don't need medical evidence to prove that case. All you need to know is that those defendants' subjective understanding of what that prisoner's medical condition was. And it can be the understanding of a guard, it can be the understanding of a nurse, it can be the understanding of a doctor. And what is that understanding, and what did they do in response? It doesn't look to a medical healthcare standard. Were they negligent in some way? Did they violate a standard of care? It's what did they believe was true about his medical condition, and what did they do in response? The nurses might have had a heightened awareness of the consequences of their inaction, or they might have been the only ones with the awareness of the seriousness of his condition, but that does not make it medical malpractice where you're breaching a medical standard of care. That change in awareness might make the nurses liable for civil rights violations if the guards were too ignorant to have a duty to act.
But do we know necessarily in this case that if Virginia Corp were primary, that we even have to address the question of the med-mal cap on the excess Virginia risk? If we don't, because we don't even know if they've got it, you've settled beyond $5 million.
That's correct.
So why would we issue an opinion on an unsettled question of law when, honestly, we don't even know if this is in play. At least the seven of us don't. I don't, at least.
Well, that's a good question. I submit that it is that issue.
By definition.
I'm sorry?
All of our questions are good questions.
That is a very good point, Your Honor. It is a very good question in that it hasn't been answered by this record. It is part of this controversy. It is one of the issues that we need resolved to resolve this case. If this court chooses to pass it by, I suppose we would have to live with that choice. But the trial court did hold that the $2 million limit applied to this case, and that is an error that needs correcting. So
it needs correcting if Virginia Court and Virginia Risk are pro rata primaries. It doesn't need correcting if Virginia Corp is primary and the entire settlement's under $5 million. In fact, it's not even an issue. It's mooted by that. But that's what I don't know the answer to.
Well, the trial court held that the $2 million limit applied to a 1983 claim, and that is the case law of Virginia, at least in New Kent Circuit. So that is an error of law that I believe this court needs to correct, because this was a declaratory judgment action seeking out what is the coverage available to the parties, what is the priority of coverage, and that was one of the holdings of that trial court that we were looking for.
No, I'm with you completely, I understand, but the reason the trial court had to get to the issue is because the trial court held this statute somehow made Virginia Risk the primary and wouldn't allow Virginia Court to be the primary. But if that's wrong, we just don't normally answer questions that we don't have to answer unless the record reflects that we should.
If you correct the first two errors, Your Honor, I'm more than willing to live with the third.
That was his question, I think. Yeah. I think that what Justice Kelsey was asking is that question relevant if we decide that Virginia Corp has primary coverage?
The record is silent on that point. I think it is accurate to say it is not relevant if you correct the first two errors.
In fact, it's not really irrelevant as much as it's a rightness, I would presume. But if you prevail on the first two, then that issue really isn't before us yet.
That's correct.
Okay. Right, and then it would be a matter of sorting out on remand in light of the answer to the first two questions, possibly.
Possibly. In that case, you would have to remand it if, I suppose, we needed that question to be resolved in light of the settlement amount.
Right, and that's what we don't know how the settlement was set up.
Right.
Okay. Counsel, let's go back to the question of the position you take on why the Virginia Court plan is primary. The statute says under A and D that DRM shall provide for primary coverage and the defense of a regional jail. And so do you take the position that because they bought a separate policy and that policy was approved by the governor, that makes it a primary policy?
The Section A doesn't say the word primary anywhere in it. Section A just says develop a plan to provide coverage for these entities for a very broad swath of claims, and it can include self-insurance, which would mean insurance funded by the Treasury, or purchase coverage. It doesn't say purchased by DRM, it just says purchased. And DRM developed the plan, which is the DRM plan here, and DRM allows its plan participants to buy coverage elsewhere. And in fact, the code allows the jail specifically here to buy any contract it wants to achieve its mission. DRM just enacted a priority.
So you allow them to, so is your position in this case, what you've done under the statute is allow them to buy their own coverage. And now when they do that, you're saying that's your primary coverage.
The jail said that. The jail contracted for primary coverage. Baycorp sold primary coverage. They agreed it was primary coverage. And DRM just didn't get in the way of their freedom of contract, because Section G says that DRM can't prohibit an
excess. I understand G, but okay. I'm trying to understand how you interpret A and D in this context.
A says I don't think that the General Assembly was thinking about priority of coverage. I don't think they were thinking primary or excess. I think they just wanted to have a solution for these entities performing a public service to get affordable liability coverage. And they said to an executive branch agency, figure something out that does what we want it to do. And DRM said, we'll have this self-insurance pool available, but if you can buy insurance elsewhere, if it's affordable and available, that's going to be your first line of defense. We'll cover anything that you can't find a market solution for. And that was their way of preserving the state funds as best as they could. And they created that exception. You can get excess naming us as primary. The jail did contract for general liability from VACORP. The record says the VACORP plan was very affordable comparatively, and so they did that. They opted to do that to have the two policies. So for this reason, we are asking this court to reverse the holding of the trial court and find in DRM's favor. Thank you.
May it please the court, Kai Memmer, along with Melissa Robinson, on behalf of the Virginia Association of Counties Group Self-Insurance Risk Pool. This is a case of statutory construction, and I think part of the history that I think is important in understanding Section 1839 is that 1839A mandates that DRM come up with a plan. They are to come up with a plan to provide for liability and incidental medical coverage, and it goes through what they're supposed to do. They did create a plan pursuant to A, and what they provided in their plan was for certain coverages. They excluded certain coverages. That would include workers' compensation, that would include auto liability, that would include property. They were mandated in A to come up with liability and incidental medical or med pay coverage. They didn't do it. They excluded that. They didn't provide a med pay coverage in their plan. There is no med pay for regional jails under the VAERISC plan. So what the regional jails did was go out and say, okay, we've got this VAERISC plan under A, but we don't have coverages, right? We can't leave our deputies out there. We can't leave our jail employees out there without comp insurance. So we need to go out and get that. And so what they did was go out and secure primary insurance that was not provided for by DRM.
But primary insurance under the Virginia court policy, it's not a med pay or any other subset of it's a general liability policy, $5 million general liability.
And it lists medical payments. It's a $7,000 premium. And it included those things. Its intention was to include those things that were not provided for under the VAERISC plan.
Okay, let's suppose that's true, that they went out and bought a general liability policy for the sole purpose of protecting med pay liability. They did buy a primary policy.
They bought a primary policy for med pay? Absolutely. They bought a primary policy for property? Absolutely. And in terms of the $7,000 section of that liability coverage that they contracted for, it includes products, completed operations, fire legal liability, premises, medical payments.
So is the argument here that if Virginia risk plan didn't exist, suppose we're not talking about any of the statutory issues, you just have the Virginia court plan with an insured, is Virginia Corp saying that the claims that ultimately ended up in this settlement were not covered claims under their policy?
On this contract, it's not a policy, but on this contract, yes, but that wouldn't have happened. What would have happened is if there was not a VAERISC plan, we would not have the E&O exclusion under the VAECorp contract, and we would not exclude public officials' liability. If they didn't have it under the VAERISC plan, they would have come to VAECorp and said, hey, we need insurance, and they would have gotten public officials' coverage. They didn't do that. So what we've got here is VAERISC providing a certain coverage, and then the regional jail saying, we've got to go elsewhere to fill those gaps. And that's what they did in this case. You have to remember that pursuant to 1839G, a regional jail is not permitted for those, and we can start at the very beginning by recognizing.
Can I stop you for a second? Because it seems like to me your argument is just looking at the VCorp insurance policy, we can see that the coverage is not applicable in this instance.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
But beyond
that. So we don't need to look at the statute. You're saying it's a matter of contract.
It is, but procedurally, we are in a different spot. Here's
our
standard
again,
today.
But as you answer the question, I don't understand that. If there's no coverage, what difference does it make if it's primary, excess, or Lloyd's of London syndicate? It's not covered, period.
Because the trial court found that there was coverage, and our cross assignment of error was not accepted.
Well,
so
that's where you are today.
That's where we are today, exactly. And so, and that's what I'm dealing with, that the trial court has found that there is coverage. I'm trying to explain the history of why the regional jail would go out and get other primary insurance.
Well, let's assume the trial court's holding, which we did not grant cross error on, is now law of the case.
Yes, sir.
Your policy, whether it's excess or primary, covers the claim. Now, what is it in 1839 that says the jail, the insured, cannot go out and buy insurance?
Okay.
Where does the law say you can't do that? We're not going to allow you to do that.
It says that you can't buy insurance beyond what the division provided unless it's excess.
Where does it say that?
That's found in G. Notwithstanding any provision to the contrary, a sheriff's department of any city or county or a regional jail shall not be precluded from securing excess, a very specific term, excess liability insurance coverage beyond.
But what am I missing? It says you can't buy, you have a right to buy excess. DRM can't shut you down on that. So that doesn't say you can't buy primary.
Well, as we just heard in the argument before, by negative implication, when the General Assembly uses an express term, it does so at the exclusion of other terms. When we look to the plain meaning of the statute, it says that nothing shall preclude.
It's a double negative. It's precluding and preventing.
It's precluding. They shall not be precluded from securing excess insurance coverage beyond. This is the other specific term in this part of the statute, which is important. Beyond the coverage provided for by the division pursuant to this section. So when VARISC has coverage, and this is a covered claim.
But isn't excess a term of art within the insurance industry?
Absolutely.
It's not saying you can't buy any other insurance. It's saying there is a primary policy and there is an excess policy.
And by the use of this, why wouldn't
says
they
you
say
can't, but because it's a term of art, it says there is a type of policy, excess, that you can't buy. As opposed to, if there wasn't a term of art within the industry, it might be interpreted as saying, you can't buy any more insurance.
Correct, but we must assume that the General Assembly means what it says and says what it means. If the word excess is not in there, and it says they shall not be precluded from securing insurance, they used a specific term.
But I agree they used a specific term, but am I not correct that within the insurance industry, the term excess means a particular type of policy?
Yes.
Okay. And so if they say you can't buy a particular, you can't prevent the locality, the jail, from buying a particular policy, then the jail presumably can buy other policies, i.e. another primary policy. What would be wrong with interpreting it that way?
Because that's not what it says. The plain meaning of the statute is that you shall not be precluded from purchasing excess insurance beyond the coverage afforded by DRM.
If it were that plain, we would immediately understand it. That's what plain meaning means. You gather up different people, and they all go, well, I understand that.
Then perhaps we need to go to the next canon that we talked about of legislative construction earlier, which is negative implication. That is the use of the express term, excess, therefore excludes all others.
But as Justice Mims just pointed out, the negative part of the negative implication is primarily DRM. You cannot DRM keep them from buying something. Why does that mean the insured, the jail, is kept from buying something? It's not even mentioning that.
Because they can't buy it for that coverage which DRM provides. That's what the statute says. So if they can buy whatever they want, why do we have G? G is meaningless.
No, it's not, because the plan that came out before G was enacted said we get to decide whether you get excess. DRM does. And the sheriff said, well, not for us. We don't want you. We get to decide. So the sheriff's got their G, and G says, we want excess. We don't need anybody's permission. We can just get it. It seems to be, talk about plain. That seems pretty plain to me, actually. What am I missing in your argument? I'm obviously missing something. I don't know what it is.
It would render G meaningless. There's no reason to have G in.
Well, let's go. Oh,
sorry. But the plan says, the plan before G said that you can't get insurance. You sign up with us, you can't get excess without our permission. Am I right on that, by the way?
Yes, you are.
All right, so the sheriff say, well, we don't like that. What does DRM in Richmond have to do with making our call? We want the authority to buy our own coverage, excess or not, without anyone's permission. So they go to General Assembly and get that right. Isn't that the fairest plain meaning of G?
I don't think it is, because the General Assembly used the specific term excess. They used the specific term beyond. They're talking about excess beyond. And when
excess is. Excess is, by definition, beyond primary.
But why, if you're limiting it to excess, if you're using that specific term, then by implication it excludes all other kinds of coverage.
But there was nothing in the plan, there was nothing in the VA risk plan that said you have to come to us for permission to get your own primary. What the plan said is you have to come to us for permission to get excess.
G is saying that in order to come get excess, your primary. At the end of the day, what G says is that anything of other insurance is beyond what the division provides. So the division provides insurance that is primary, which is consistent with D. As Justice McClanahan pointed out earlier, D says that you shall provide a defense. The division shall provide a defense to those claims that are made by participants under the plan. They shall provide a defense.
The plan has an other insured clause, which says if there's a primary ahead of us, then we're excess. So there's the plan. It's not covered unless it's an excess claim.
How can an insurance risk plan supersede statute? The statute in D is clear. It doesn't say if you have other insurance. It doesn't say if we're talking about other insurance policies. It's clear that they shall provide a defense, which is consistent.
But to participating entities, and if there's an order of coverage, then you participate to the extent of your coverage, right?
That's not what the statute says. The statute says that they will provide a defense.
The division shall provide for the legal defense of participating entities. So if you're only participating to the extent of excess coverage, well, then that's what the defense is geared toward, no?
No, it says that you will provide a defense. They want to provide a defense, and they want to control whether or not the case is going to be settled or not.
Can I ask you this, just switching gears? We had an exchange with your opposing counsel about the deliberate indifference and the constitutional claim, and whether, you know, how we should sort that out. Do you have a response to that exchange?
I do. 8.01581.1 provides that a health care provider includes a nurse. It also defines medical malpractice as any negligence, any tort negligence relating to the care of medicine. This is a constitutional tort. The United States Supreme Court has held that in numerous occasions, and this is absolutely something that is a medical malpractice claim.
But there's this further layer, which is we're not cognizant of the terms of the settlement, so, you know, depending on how we sort this out, would we remand that, or do we have to answer that at this level?
I think based upon the procedure and the way that the case has been accepted on appeal, it would need to be answered.
Thank you.
Okay, going back to the big picture on this, on how you read the statute.
Yes, Your Honor.
C says you can that participation in the risk management plan is voluntary, and your client or the jail is under that position, right?
Well, it's voluntary for certain local governments. For constitutional officers and for sheriffs, they've had to seek approval of the state compensation board. This regional jail did participate in the Bay Risk Plan. And to get back to the original...
Okay, and that's my question. So then if you go to B, be. I'm trying to figure out why you would ever go outside other than price. I mean, DRM points out that price would send you out to buy another policy. But under B, I mean, there are particular caps and immunity specific to sheriffs.
Yes, Your Honor.
So wouldn't you want these to apply? So you...
In terms of the jail?
Right, exactly.
Yes, you would want those to apply. And that's why regional jails and sheriffs and other constitutional officers, they're required. This is a Bay Risk one plan. And DRM has taken the position that this is actually compulsory. But you would want those. And then for the areas that were not...
And if you go out and buy a primary policy, then you are not applicable. I mean, you don't get the benefit of B.
You do get the benefit of B because they did get a VARIS plan covering these claims. They have a VARIS plan in place covering these claims.
Will the insured get if we rule in your favor and affirm the trial court, will the insured get a rebate of all the premiums that paid for a primary policy when, in fact, according to your view, if we agree with it, it's not primary?
I don't know the answer to that, but I think what might be lost sometimes is that these are two self-insurance pools. This isn't private insurance. This is a self-insurance pool.
There's still premiums. There's still underwriters. The calculations are exactly the same with commercial policies. And the insured are still paying for something. But under your understanding and the trial court's understanding, they actually got not at all what they paid for, which is they bought a primary policy. It was sold as a primary policy. But they're not going to get the coverage of a primary policy.
They paid $7,000 for $5 million in coverage for what they believed were going to be premises medical payment claims. The premium that was paid to VARISK first, they went out and obtained that primary policy first, paid much, much more for that coverage, covering those public officials' claims, which is what this is.
Well, that would imply to me that underwriters didn't read the policy they were allocating the premium for, because it's not a MedPay policy. It is a primary general liability policy.
With exclusions for errors and omissions and for other coverages that it did not provide, which was public officials. This is a public officials' claim. We did not provide for public officials' coverage. When they don't get that, it is therefore excluded under our policy. But the General Assembly clearly, and if there's any question about the plain meaning of it, we look at the legislative history of the statute. This G was added originally as Section F in 2007. And when it was added, it was originally proposed that sheriff's departments shall not be precluded. When it went through the House committee, amendments were added, and it said supplemental insurance as opposed to excess. Supplemental, meaning other insurance. A vague term of art. And when it went through the House amendments, what ultimately was approved in that legislative history is very clear, that those terms were changed and a regional jail and regional jails was added. So not just the sheriffs would be precluded. And then supplemental was changed to excess. Now supplemental insurance is a vague term. Other insurance of any kind, co-primary, whatever it might be, but the General Assembly chose the specific term excess beyond the coverage afforded by the division. If this court were to determine that somehow we are primary or VACORP is co-primary, then G is rendered meaningless, that it was not the intent of the legislator. That violates, I believe, the plain meaning of the words that are used, excess, beyond, and notwithstanding any other provision. It certainly violates the negative implication canon. And then when we get to the specific versus general, we talk about general coverages up above, but in G, a very specific term is used. This court would have to disregard that or find that the General Assembly did not mean or understand what excess insurance is. They have defined and looked at excess insurance in many other parts of the code. The General Assembly gets it, they understand it, and when this statute was amended, to use the word excess, it was a specific term. The legislative history bears that out. So nothing would preclude, for those folks that already have VAERS coverage, nothing would preclude sheriff's departments and regional jails from getting any excess insurance over and above that. Now, when you use that term, it therefore, by implication, eliminates co-insurance, co-primary, other primary, other types of insurance that we know exist. We have to believe that the General Assembly, and that's this court's direction, obviously, is to give it, it must have some meaning. It must have some meaning. Each and every term must have some meaning. Again, I think the statute, when you harmonize it, when you harmonize A, that they shall provide, when you harmonize B in terms of the protections that are given, when you harmonize D, where they are, DRM is to provide a defense, shall provide a defense, not maybe, not if there's something else, shall provide a defense. And then we get to G, which says that a regional jail shall not be precluded in getting excess insurance beyond what is already provided. When we harmonize this statute and give meaning to G, which was passed in 2007, no, at no time after 2007, it's been amended and reenacted five times since 2007, and nowhere did DRM or anyone else come in to seek amendment that would change the absolute requirement of defense in D, which indicates that obviously this is a primary policy. If there are no further questions, we certainly would ask that this court affirm the decision of the trial court with regard to the issues that are before.
Thank you. The court is going to have 2 minutes extra for you to respond to a question of Justice Goodwin.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Given the language in Section B of 1839, why would a jail buy an excess policy? Why would a jail buy another liability policy?
I think that a jail certainly could buy. The point of G is to preserve the right for them to buy in excess, but that's not what they did. Why would they buy it is a good question. And
I can understand why they would buy an excess policy.
Sure.
But if you have a statute that says that if you have the risk management policy, your damages are basically capped at $1.5 million, why would you buy another policy to go in front of that
one? I think that limitation was just for specific people, and like for example, in this case, the damages weren't capped because it was nurses and guards that were being sued, and so the purchase of another policy that had a much higher limit, there was $5 million in coverage available. DRM only has $1 million in coverage available to guards, and then in specific cases of medical malpractice, it's concurrent with the Virginia's medical malpractice damages cap. So the coverage limit is pretty low for these kinds of claims. So the VACORP sold them a policy with a $5 million limit at, by their own admission, a great deal, a great price for that much coverage. And so,
that's one thing everyone can agree upon.
Right, and their policy does have a bunch of exclusions in it. So I think that the jail official or the NRJA, the governing body, said this policy has a huge limit but a ton of exclusions. The DRM plan has these other benefits but a much lower limit. By getting both, we cover just about any kind of liability we might face.
And the limits in B would not apply, for example, in a 1983 action.
I'm out of time. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
The court will be in recess and will reconvene at 10:45.
All right.